This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly dug Joycast.
Now, one of the things we like to do on this program at very regular intervals, although we've had a bit of a hiatus, is that we like to look at legal issues that affect our community. We've talked about trans issues, we've talked about relationship issues, we've talked about surrogacy and so on. But it's all been terribly Australian. So what I wanted to do today is to talk about what happens when your partner isn't Australian, when you've got migration issues to deal with. And joining me to help us look at this is our resident legal eagle, Christina Antoniadis, who has just this minute come rushing into the studio. So I'm talking for a long time to let her get her breath back.
Thank you, Doug.
How are you?
I'm well, yourself?
Have you recovered?
I am ready to go.
Good, because we've all been down with the bug, but I think we're all back together. This is something is a bit dear to my heart, because when I first came to Australia, in fact, neither of us is Australian, so we had to juggle a lot of things to get us both into Australia. But let's start with a situation where I'm an Australian and my partner isn't. What kind of legal hurdles do I have to get over?
Fortunately, at the moment, with changes that have been made to the immigration laws, it is irrelevant whether you're in a same-sex relationship or you're heterosexual. So that's one hurdle that you don't have to jump. It does not matter if you're gay. What matters is the definition of de facto partner. That's the biggest thing. And what they define it as is you must have a mutual commitment to a shared life together to the exclusion of others. So obviously you can't be in an open relationship. The relationship between you and your partner must be genuine.
And right.
That obviously avoids people that get married for the simple purpose of coming over to Australia. You must have lived together and not separately on a permanent basis at least 12 months prior to your application.
You know, this is all very similar to how it used to be when I came in as, because my partner came in as on a working visa, and then
yes.
I followed him as an interdependent partner, as it was then called.
Yes.
This sounds like very much the similar kind of hurdles we had to go through.
It is.
Where you had to prove you were a couple. And you had to prove. I think one of the biggest problems for us was that because my partner is an international businessman,
yes.
He does a lot of travelling on business and quite often overseas for extended periods. So the bit that was difficult was proving that we had lived together continuously for
12 months.
The appropriate amount of time, because he'd been like, you know, he was on a contract in Switzerland for a month here, and he was on a contract somewhere else for another couple of weeks there. Then we had to bring up things like phone records to say we'd been constantly in touch and all
exactly.
that sort of thing.
And that hasn't changed, unfortunately. You're still mm-hmm. going to have to jump those hurdles. The legislation says it does not matter if you're not strictly living together, but, you know, for that example, if one party is travelling. But the reality is it's still as hard, and you still have to make a number of affidavits and statutory declarations. And the issue as well is it's not sufficient just to have an affidavit from or a supporting document from a friend or a family member. It has to be more extensive than that. So you've got to talk to your employers, and it really analyses your relationship. And it does so, I guess, on the basis that, you know, you do have people that come in under false pretenses, but it doesn't make it any easier.
Mm. Lot of paperwork to find?
A lot of paperwork, yeah. You've got to go all the way back to bank statements to show that you're dependent upon the other person, phone bills, as you said, utility accounts if they're in joint names, all of those things have to be brought up.
So basically, if you've lived fairly, in one sense, fairly separate lives, like kept your finances separate and paid your own bills and things like that,
yes.
That's going to make it much more difficult to prove you've actually got a relationship.
It is. It's going to be much more difficult. And the other thing is, you may just say you've gone to Canada and you've married over there or somewhere where gay people can marry. That's not sufficient to come into Australia because it's not legally recognised in Australia. So it's not easier.
It's not even a contributory factor?
Look, they will have regard to it, but it's not relevant in so far as it's not legally recognised here. So they'll say, okay, you got married in Canada, that's great, but you're not legally recognised here.
Okay, so it's still quite a difficult process to prove that you've got a genuine relationship.
It is. For example, to prove your relationship, just the history of it, you have to say how, when and where you first met, how your relationship developed, if you decided to marry and why, or if you decide to live together and why, how you're emotionally attached to the person, have you maintained your relationship during periods of separation. It's really onerous.
Okay. So, and this is for de facto whether you're straight or gay.
Exactly.
So, if you're married, however, it's rather different, isn't it?
It is.
If you're straight and married, I should say. If you're gay and married, it doesn't make it a scary difference. But
yes.
if you're heterosexual and married, that's more or less accepted at face value, isn't it?
No, not necessarily. No? I've been involved in a matter where I've had a gay client that married a straight woman. And basically that doesn't make any difference. You still have to prove the marriage, because it's very easy for heterosexual people to get married. And on the face of it, as we know, and on the face of it, that should be enough. But now they're actually cottoning on to the fact that, you know, gay people can marry heterosexual people just so they get that visa status. You still have to prove the relationship, the finances, the telephone records, all of that. So it's quite a big process. It's great, isn't it?
Well, I remember talking to my migration agent about this when we were going through this process, which took quite a long time. And he said, what you have to bear in mind, he says, is that the immigration department has what I would call a rejectionist mindset.
Yes.
It is their job. It is not their job to let you in. It is their job to keep you out.
Exactly.
And you have to give them sufficient cause to change their mind.
Yes.
And that is very hard to do.
Did you find that you were discriminated against because of your sexuality?
It's very hard to say whether one was or wasn't.
Yes.
There were a number of incidents that took place during the process which gave rise to suspicions.
Yes.
For example, I had to have medical, I had to have chest x-rays and various other medical things done. And then after I'd done all that and sent all that in, I approached them and asked for, okay, how's that happening? You know, where's that going? Whatever. And they claimed never to have received it.
Yes.
And I had to do all that again.
Yeah.
Then there was another occasion when I said, how is this progressing? And they claimed not to be able to find my file.
That happens very commonly.
Then on another occasion, there was a story that the file had got lost because there'd been a flood in the basement at this particular office block. Oh, and my file had been one of the ones that had got sodden. Therefore they'd lost all the paperwork and I'd have to resubmit it, at which point my migration agent put in a Freedom of Information request.
Yes.
And within about 2 weeks I had my visa.
Amazing, isn't it?
So, and there were various odd things that happened, like I was leaving the country to go back to the UK to visit my family at one point and I was detained at the airport.
Oh, wow.
For about 2 hours. This was on my way out of Australia, and the only explanation they could give me was, and I'd been coming in and out of Australia fairly regularly over the previous 2-3 years while I was going through this process. The only explanation they could give me was that my description and my details matched those of a known terrorist.
Oh, wow.
So they took all my luggage off me and they locked me in a windowless room for about 2 hours.
That's amazing.
I eventually hammered on the door and somebody came and I managed to get my flight.
Yep. Yep.
But there was no reason for that.
And can I say, you don't look like a terrorist, just for the record.
You know, with a beard, I suppose.
Yeah, that's
stretching,
true.
stretching a point a wee bit, I felt, you know, at that point. And to detain me on the way out amused me.
Yeah,
you know. I mean, I can understand being detained on the way into the country, but if you're a terrorist, surely they want to get rid of you.
Exactly, exactly.
And that was about the time when they were busy losing my files and they were down in this flooded basement and whatever.
Yeah.
So I suspect there was a certain amount of that sort of thing going on, but you can never prove these things.
I know. And that's a thing. And I get clients say that they were discriminated against, but how do you prove it? How do you prove it any different to any other case that they have? Handle.
Yes. So, you know, fortunately, I found the original migration agent I had wasn't much use. I found another one. He was extremely good.
Yes.
And if anyone wants to know who he is and he's in this position, I'm very happy to recommend him off air.
Fantastic.
Do you find that there is much discrimination that you suspect is taking place? And is it any worse for a gay couple than a heterosexual couple?
Look, because I don't practice in immigration, all I can go on is what my clients tell me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them find the process very, very difficult. And they do say that they are discriminated against, and they have to prove things. And some of them have said that they even feel like the immigration agents have actually said, oh, but gay relationships are quite fleeting. so you could be, they question the 12-month the 12-month period for cohabitation, and also say, you know, they actually ask straight out, have you slept with anyone else in the last 12 months? So that I think they find quite difficult, and they have questioned whether heterosexual couples get those same questions, and obviously I can't answer that.
No. But it does sound as though they've got some rather prejudicial attitudes that you've got to get through. Well, yeah, it doesn't sound like it's improved a huge amount, except on you know, in principle, as it were. I mean, at least you don't have that demeaning thing of having to prove you're dependent on the other
person. Look, and there's a long way to come, I think, in terms of amending the legislation.
Yeah, but at least we know we can get legal help if we need it.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you very much, Christina.
Thanks, Doug.
Christina Antoniadis there from Nichols Family Law, who are one of our sponsors here on Joy, I should add, and very welcome they are too.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.